everyone, this is your buddy Harmon. Welcome to Comedy History 101. What's going on? Where's Scott? I don't get it. Well, actually, Scott is moving to Berlin this week, so we thought because it's summer, we would bring you a Comedy History 101 select. Yes, a CH101 select from the archives. This goes all the way back to April of 2017. Remember what that was like? Whoa, hey, what's going on? Yeah, so this is a history of the Improv Comedy Club. Chances are you haven't heard it because back then no one really listened to our podcast. But next week we'll be back with a brand new episode. So enjoy from the archives, a history of the Improv Comedy Club.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101. Should we just roll?
Yeah, I'm rolling. I'm already rolling, dude.
All right. Hey, how is everyone? Happy 2017. I'm Harmon Leon, and with me is...
Scott Colonico. Hello, everyone.
This is the very first recording of our new podcast, Comedy History 101. Yep. What would that be, Scott?
That would be like your core requirement, you know, if you're going to school, that you'd have to take this class.
And as the title implies, what do you think people will get out of this podcast?
Hopefully they'll be able to answer a 500-word essay we'll be testing everybody at the end. Yeah, there'll be an essay.
So as the name implies, this is a podcast about the history of comedy.
And, bah, bah, bah. Yeah, you need a sting. You need some sound effects in there.
Bah, bah, bah.
Yeah.
I think we'll use that one. I think for this very first episode, let's start at something very iconic, and let's talk about the history of the Improv Comedy Club. When you think of the Improv Comedy Club, what do you think of, Scott?
The brick wall, man. That's the thing that you think of. And I think of A&E. A&E on cable, watching stand-up on cable.
Yep, so there's 22 improv comedy clubs around the country. The main club is in Los Angeles. The evening at the improv show that you talked about, they filmed 200 episodes.
Yeah, that was a good one. That was it. That was comedy in the 80s, pretty much.
Yeah. So pretty much the improv, all the big names of comedy started at the improv. Everyone from Richard Pryor, Andy Kaufman, Jay Leno, Seinfeld.
You ever see a crook named Righty?
So it's pretty much a who's who of comedy that started at the improv. There's like those big comedy names, like club-wise. There's like the Improv, the Comedy Cellar in New York.
Comedy Store.
The Comedy Store, yep. And then Improv is just like one of these iconic clubs. It started in 1963, and who started the Improv?
Hi, I'm Bud Friedman, and I've got my eye on Norwich, Connecticut.
Oh, that was Bud. Bud Friedman, or wasn't it his wife, or was it him?
No, it was actually Bud Friedman in 1963. Himself. Yeah. At the time, he was kind of like an aspiring Broadway producer, and he opened the Improv as like kind of this coffee shop, sort of place where performers could hang out after shows. And it was mostly like musicians would go up. So it was like singers, and they would go up and they would sing, and then comedy sort of got rolling into the mix. And the very first comedian to go up was this guy named Dave Astor. Mm-hmm. And I did a little research on him, okay. And like in the 50s, he was actually arrested like at a Washington D.C. comedy club for being too blue.
Oh no! Okay.
like a Lenny Bruce sort of thing. So he had to go like to like court, and like the judge would read transcripts of his like routine in the courtroom.
Really?
Without the benefit of like timing.
Do we have any of his clips?
No, I looked on YouTube to see if there was anything. Okay. But he went on to be on, I think it was like on the Jack Parr show.
Okay.
And maybe Ed Sullivan, but he was like the very first comedian on at the Improv. So they would have like a bunch of singers, then he would go on, and then after a while, he brought more of his like comedian friends down there, and then it was like every like three singers would be a comic, and then eventually like everything else, you know, with comedians and stage time, eventually just all became comedy.
Yeah, yeah. So that was, and then who was playing the piano down there?
Oh, it's really funny. So Dustin Hoffman would occasionally play the piano.
Yeah.
And Peter Allen. Well, my baby, well, my baby's
found me. I'm going to be on. There's no road. Yeah, Peter, I was just looking that up. There was, I have some recollection of Kevin Klein doing a really funny Peter Allen bit on Saturday Night Live a long time ago.
Kevin Klein or Robert Klein?
It was Kevin Klein.
Right, okay, yeah.
He's basically singing about Peter Allen, but I can't find the clip anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, so, like, Judy Garland played there, mm-hmm. and I think Bud said he remembers, like, Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli singing together on stage at the Improv.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been something to see.
Yeah, yeah, so the club was located at West 44th Street near the corner of 9th Avenue and Hell's Kitchen. I went by there, like, recently, and it's just basically all restaurants. So at the time, that was kind of like a rough neighborhood.
Yeah, it was Hell's Kitchen, the name.
Thus the name. Yeah. So the club was started in a Vietnamese restaurant, and it just kind of had like kind of crappy decor. So what they did was they tore down the wall, and there's like this great brick wall underneath, and that's how the iconic brick wall got started.
Oh, wow. Because, you know, it's so iconic to the point where all you can have to do is put up a brick wall and put a mic in front of it, and everyone knows.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's literally brick wall reads, like, if you want to be, like, a set designer, yeah. You know, okay, we need a comedy club setting. You would put up a brick wall.
Yeah, I mean, that would it, and a mic and the spotlight, that's it. Do we know why Bud wears an eyepiece? He wears a monocle.
I know, because I think he was, like, the original hipster.
Okay, but does he need to wear that monocle, or?
Well, tell me this: does anyone need to wear a monocle?
I mean, we need to find out a little bit more about this monocle. I mean, like 1930s, like evil German guys would wear monocles.
Or just doing a little Google research, Mr. Peanut.
Yeah, okay, Mr. Peanut. Yeah, and then and like does Monopoly guy have a monocle? It's like 1920s robber barons probably all had monocles too.
Yeah, yeah. Like JJ Moneypants. Yeah, you know, from like a 1920s pre-year depression top hat wearing monocle guy.
Oh, Mr. Moneypants.
But Mr. Moneypants.
I think that kind of used to be Improv's kind of logo, I thought.
Friedman?
No, I thought it was like a monocle or something. I thought they kind of used that as kind of their logo at one point.
Yeah, maybe so. But yeah, I tried to dig around why he wears a monocle, but he's just like, he was just kind of like the crazy eccentric guy.
Yeah. Huh.
Here's an interesting tidbit. And the reason that they moved into a Vietnamese restaurant, I was reading this interview with Bud, was it was like 1962. At the height of the Vietnam War, Vietnamese restaurants didn't go over so well.
Well, that was – if it was 60 – no, he moved in like 62 or 63.
63, they moved into the space. So yeah, I think he was looking at the space in like 1962, and then they moved in 63.
Yeah. But, I mean, the war didn't start big full-time until like 65, 66. So maybe these people didn't know what Vietnamese food was. I would say that'd be it. Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't know the pleasures of good plate,
pho.
Good bowl of pho.
Is it pho or pho?
Yeah, I know. We should spell check that.
No, I mean it's people say it differently, and
yeah,
I mean,
we should
talk to a Vietnamese person.
That's a whole podcast in itself.
I knew how to say fuck your mother in Vietnamese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Du ma mi.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna have to beep that.
No, dude, it's the podcast. You can say whatever you want.
Oh, freedom of speech.
Yeah, dude, we gotta use it while we got it.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Trump's going to take it away. Yeah. So yeah. One kind of urban legend was that Bette Midler was a waitress at the Improv, but she never was.
Okay.
But she would perform there.
Yeah. Did she play piano and stuff? And
No. Yeah, I think she was just like a songstress.
Uh-huh.
And then Bud actually managed her and got her first spot on The Tonight Show.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, there's because they kind of started out as a place for everyone to go after they performed, you know, not that it wasn't really a place for the punters to go at first.
Yeah, it was like kind of like a clubhouse. So people would get done with like their Broadway shows and they wanted to hang out. And, you know, it was just kind of like a place to go like after shows, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they originally just served coffee and then they got a liquor license. And then, you know, it just kind of built. And then basically like the heyday was you know, like those iconic 70s comedians like Richard Belzer and, you know, Rodney Dangerfield and Richard Lewis.
So what? So is this still in the New York one then?
Yeah. Okay. So the New York one was to 63. And then it just like Jay Leno used to drive. He lived in Boston and he would like ride his motorcycle down like three nights in a row and just ride back to Boston.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And he would just like sleep in the Improv parking lot.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think there was some story where that was the other Improv, I think, where like somebody was fucking in an alley right next to him.
Next to Jay Leno?
Yeah, while he was sleeping. It's like, I guess I'll wait till we get to the other Improv if we're still on the New York Improv right now.
Yeah.
We're still in New York. Hey, forget about it.
Yeah. So I think one of the first big breakout stars was like Freddie Prinze.
Right, okay.
Chico and the Man, Freddie Prinze.
Yeah.
He was like 16 years old when he like first went to the Improv. Have you seen any like Freddie Prinze stand-up?
No. Like, not the junior. Do you mean his dad?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I haven't. No.
I grew up in New York in a neighbor called Washington Heights. It's not really a ghetto, it's a ghetto suburb, right? Slums with trees, right? Even the birds are junkies.
I mean, looking back with, like, 2017 eyes, it's just like, you know, there's so many cockroaches in my apartment. You know, that kind of, like, New York type of humor.
The people that kind of lasted were the people that talked, you know, it was either the really weird people or mm-hmm. the people who were, like, talking about stuff that, like, you know, like Belzer and those guys and stuff, you know, issues that would carry through.
Can you be a little bit more quiet because I want to have a nervous breakdown now. Any noise during the breakdown.
But, like, people who would, like, kind of build their act on, like, you know, commercials of the day or what have you that, you know, I'm sure it killed at the time, but now you're, like, it doesn't make any sense anymore, you know?
How many people saw Shogun?
Yeah. So this is a podcast with Mike Birbiglia, and he was like, his new movie, he just said, when writing the script, he just made sure not to have any, like, cultural references, like even making, like, Twitter jokes. He would think, you know, is this going to be relevant, you know, like 10 years from now? Will they even know what Twitter is? You know, so he was, like, very conscious of, you know, not having those type of jokes in it, because it's just, like, you know, the longevity of it was crucial. But one of the big breakout stars, of course, was Andy Kaufman.
So first, I would like to imitate Archie Bunker. You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid. You're meathead. Get out of my chair. You dingbat. Go in the kitchen. Make me the food. Everybody's so stupid. I don't like nobody so stupid. Thank you very much.
Right.
I think he first came to the club maybe around like 73 or so.
Yeah. I mean, he was at it for a while. I think there was some club in Long Island that he was performing on before that. And then he kind of worked up to the Improv, I think.
Yeah. So I think either Bud saw him at the club in Long Island, or I read that somewhere that Bud first saw him at a club in Long Island, or he showed up at the Improv and he would just stayed in character like he was the foreign guy. And then like Bud just goes, okay, I'll put you on. And then it's like, you know, he just purposely like bombs as the foreign guy.
I like the foreign guy.
Well, the foreign guy is great. Yeah. And then, like, back in the day, so he would do things like at the Improv, like just go on stage in a sleeping bag. And just look at the audience.
Yeah. and then you're just kind of like, all right.
Yeah. Or just like, you did a lot of like reading of children's books.
Yeah.
And the classic book is the Great Gatsby, reading The Great Gatsby.
Yeah, and people would get really mad at him.
All right, now look, let's keep it down, please, because, you know, we have a long way to go.
But essentially, though, if you watch, like, his early stuff, he's not doing stand-up. He's just, like, a performance artist.
Right, exactly.
Like, you know, he's staying in character as, like, you know, he's not, like, you know, trying to go joke for joke. He was just taking it as, like, a performance artist sort of approach to it.
Yeah, but it was, like, concentrated. It wasn't, like, this thing where, you know, you're have a performance artist and go and you're like gonna do an hour or something. You knew, like, he was doing performance art, but it was like that very, it was like a burst, micro burst, or whatever you want to call it, where, you know, it'd work in a comedy club setting, you know.
Yeah. I mean, this stand up was so, you know, that type of club was so new, so it's just like, it seems like the rules were more open.
Yeah, I mean, that was the interesting thing about, you know, when you start doing stand-up, and then, like, when everybody kind of starts out that same level where nobody's really that great yet or anybody knows anything, and then, like, you do meet all these different, you know, there's the intelligent comedian dude, there's a prop comedian, you know, so you wind up meeting all these different, even though if you don't like their comedy, you can still like them as a person. That's always interesting.
So you can still like people with bad acts, is what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, if they're not like Andrew,
are you sure?
If they're not, I like you, dude.
You know what I'm doing right now? I'm pointing at you.
Well, I mean, if they were just like bad and just like not like racistly funny, racistly bad, I wouldn't be friends with somebody like that, you know.
All right, so you wouldn't be like friends with Roy Chubby Brown and no. Roy Chubby Brown. Just as a side note, you know what I found is like there's a Roy Chubby Brown tribute artist.
Yeah, no, I think you sent that to me. Before,
oh yeah. And also a Bernard Manning tribute artist. People who might not know who those are, they're racist British comedians.
Yeah, why don't you insert a couple of their clips right here?
I'm down the packing shop yesterday, and I know this is not politically correct. Sorry, it's no.
Going back to Andy Kaufman, is this like what was like? So he became like Bud's son, like at the club. Like Bud just loved Andy Kaufman. He was like the house weirdo. What I love about Andy Kaufman is, and we could do a full Andy Kaufman episode, is that like a lot of his bits, like before people know him, he would purposely just bomb. He would start his set off by just bombing on stage on purpose.
Yeah.
And then just completely turn it around and have the audience screaming.
Yeah, well, that was the, you know, that was the Elvis thing, where his Elvis impersonation was actually pretty good, but he would start off.
Oh, my
off,
God, no, yeah. It was, like, spot on perfect.
Yeah, yeah, it was okay. I mean, it was like, 90% there. But I would say what made it better was that he would go on stage as Foreign Man.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then really bomb, and then they go, oh, I'm going to do another, and he would do those really bad impressions. Like, he would do the Archie Bunker. I am sitting in the chair. Yeah, you know, he would do these really bad impressions, and then, you know, he'd get all sad, and then he'd do the, he's like, now I'm going to do one more impression. I'll do the Elvis. And then he would do the Elvis, and it would actually be really good, and he'd have the suit on underneath, and that's what kind of made it so, you know, he would turn things around. Yeah.
Yeah, or there's the one where he would just start crying and he had bongo drums.
Yeah, bongos.
And he was like crying and he'd just like slap the bongo.
Yeah.
Like, and then he'd like in the beat of his crying, and then suddenly you just burst into the like this bongo solo.
Yeah.
This is so brilliant.
Yeah, so that must have been like amazing. How long was that New York club? It's not still open, is it?
Oh, no. Okay. It closed, I'm reading here, I think 1970. Oh, we'll look that up.
Okay.
But it closed because Bud got divorced after he moved the club to L.A., and his wife got the New York club, and he got the L.A. club, and I think maybe sometime in – yeah, you think if we do a history of the improv podcast
– you would know.
You would know
the history of the improv.
I don't know. That's what Google's for.
Okay.
You people Google it.
Just have – that would be
we're
the whole –
we're working hard here.
That's the pizza. That's the whole – every podcast just go, hey, you go Google it. It's like they're all like yeah, 5 seconds
which is
long.
Also a good name for a podcast, but – which is probably already a podcast.
it's just ads and then us in the middle going, go Google it. And then that's the
end. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's a great clip of Andy Kaufman, a 1977 HBO young comedian special that's filmed at the Improv.
Up to now, you know, every time I've appeared someplace, I always do the that foreign man character that I do. And I'd like to branch out more, you know, just do myself. So
again, he goes on stage just doing, he's like, I'm just gonna be myself, I'm not doing the crazy character. And he just starts doing like these really bad like jokes,
yeah,
that are getting laughs. Like first the audience is sort of laughing because they know it's Andy Kaufman, but he's like he's just purposely bombing again, and he runs off stage crying.
It's not working, so I think, thank you very much, and I'm sorry, and there's other acts, and so I really shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
And he comes back, and then he's like, goes into the bongos.
I read an interesting fact about Freddie Prinze. He was Hungarian. I didn't know that.
Oh, Hungarian and Puerto Rican.
Yeah, and Puerto Rican, but Hungarian.
So I'm a Hungarian.
So in 1975, Bud moved the club from New York to Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and he opened the club where on Melrose.
Right.
And that was like, unlike the other, the New York club, it was built like specifically for stand-up comedy, and they kept the brick wall intact. Jay Leno actually helped paint the ceilings of the L.A. club.
Mm-hmm.
And his partner was Chris Albrecht, who later went on to be the president of HBO.
Oh, whose partner? You mean Bud's?
Bud's partner, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so part of the history of, like, the Improv is, like, the people that, like, worked there. Like, Judge Apatow was a door manager there.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Now it says Daniel Baldwin was a bartender there. Is he one of the Baldwin brothers?
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah, and then apparently Alec worked at Studio 54. I was reading somewhere.
Alec Baldwin?
Yeah. You know,
oh, cool.
Trump. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. What was Trump? What did Trump own Studio 54?
No, but I'm sure he hung out there. Mm. Maybe after going to the Improv in New York. Well, but it would have been closed by then.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And so Deborah Winger was a waitress there.
Oh, yeah.
In the L.A. one. Yep. And the woman who wrote Thelma and Louise.
Okay. No name, just the woman who wrote Thelma and Louise.
Well, she has a really hard last name to pronounce. Okay. Kelly Corey.
All right.
Yeah, so it's just this like podcast on how to do podcasts.
Yeah.
And they said always know research so you pronounce names correctly. It was one of the key components of doing good podcasts.
Okay, so
it's Kelly Corey.
So did we do that for this podcast?
Yeah, but no, you know what, dude? To know the rules is to break the rules.
Okay, so you're
you gotta know the rules to break the rules.
Yeah, but that's a comedy thing though too, because I remember like that was like the big thing was, yeah, they would say when you're doing Justin on mic here, they would say when you're doing comedy, you know, they would like sometimes like the MC, like they didn't like you, they would like get your name wrong on purpose.
You know? Oh my god.
Yeah.
You mean just be an asshole?
Yeah, just kind of being an asshole, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think there's a Marin podcast where like a comic was on and like he said like one of his first sets Marin was like the host, uh-huh. and purposely did something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, I think I remember I heard that one too. Yeah, that's yeah, I knew some people that would do that sometimes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Just to be like an asshole.
Yeah, just to not be a dick. Well, you're hosting, dude, because that I thought that was the interesting thing about the the A&E special they would tape there is that Bud was the warm up act.
Oh yeah.
and
it's like as like all the comedians say, he was like the worst host.
Yeah, that was
like for a while, like at one time he was like actually trying to do jokes on stage.
Yeah,
I think one of the Wayans brothers, Keenan, maybe said like you would just Bud would tell jokes and then you would go up to just like blank looks on people's faces.
Because
it's like which is like the opposite of being a good host.
Oh yeah, or that's like the idea.
What is it called? Pumping the
pump. You pump the crowd up, priming the pump. Yeah. And what you're supposed to do is you get the crowd excited about being at the show and not.
But he's like the owner. But it works on the TV show though, sort of. You know.
Well, editing, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's true. So I've gigged at the Improv a few times. I remember, I think it was like the first time I gigged at the Improv in LA, and I was like all excited, and then like, there's Bud Freeman. And then he like came up to me and then he went, you can't stand there. It's like, oh shit, I'm being yelled at by the guy from TV.
Are we telling our improv stories now?
Are we on that segment yet?
Are we? No, let me go back. That's the other thing about podcasts. You should
keep to the itinerary.
Stick to the order.
Okay. We'll save that story for later.
Okay. We'll say that.
Or in post, I could like edit it out and drop it in.
Yeah. But we'll. Yeah. That's all be up to you, dude.
We edited it from before and we dropped it in here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Blowing people's minds.
Yeah, blowing my mind, dude. Okay. Well, so we're in the West Coast and we closed down the store, a comedy store in New York. It's not comedy, the Improv.
The Improv. Yeah. That's a different podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast, yeah.
Yeah, so things were going along smoothly until 1979 when, do you know what I'm going to mention here?
I do.
The Comedy Store. Comedy Store. Strike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mitzi, the comedians organized a protest against Mitzi Shore because she was not paying the headlining acts. So... there was a big strike. It got really ugly. Actually, one comedian, and we'll save this for another podcast, actually jumped off the roof of the Riot Hyatt into the Comedy Store parking lot.
Yeah, that was just right next door, or pretty close by, right?
Yeah. So comics started going to the Improv for stage time.
Okay.
Until there was a big fire that burned down the entire Improv.
Oh my God. Okay, what year was this?
1979.
All right. Okay. And was it Ars? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I'm too excited. Who did it?
they don't know, but the rumors stem that it was a disgruntled comedian who bombed on stage or some of like Mitzi Shore's thugs.
Uh-huh. Oh, my God. Her jackbooted thugs.
Yeah. Comedian thugs.
It could have been Polly.
Who would that be? Like Dice Clay?
And no, Polly was Dice like, Clay and, it was probably Dice Clay and Yakov Smirnoff.
Dude, I just took a sip of coffee. I almost did a spit take.
Save it for the live show. Save it for the live show.
I just pictured like Yakov Smirnoff with a big thing, with a big
Russian hat,
gasoline,
and a big Russian hat on.
Yeah. Dousing the Improv with gasoline, going, what a country.
I was doing some research for another podcast, and I was watching a bit of Yakov Smirnoff's material just not too long ago, and some of it was all
it's
right.
It's not bad, dude.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's still pretty funny. He makes fun of Cleveland, which is really funny.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience. They're not going anywhere.
So this was filmed at Dangerfields. There was that young comedian special that he was on. And we used to use those clips for our show, Jokey-Okey.
Oh, yeah. Dangerfields, that's a whole nother podcast.
Because here's the crazy thing. Dangerfields is still open, and I know no one that performs there.
Really?
Yeah, it's just like this crazy – I just heard it's like horrible.
Uh-huh.
And it's still running. It's like to this day.
Wow.
And I just heard like the vibe is just really awful there. And I just really know no one other than a few people that have actually performed there. You never hear people – saying, you know, they're doing sets at Dangerfields.
Oh, yeah. You never see that listed on anybody's CV.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's still open. But yeah, so the improv burnt down. It was like the whole thing burnt down. And so to help rebuild it, I think hold on a second here. Oh, help rebuild it, Robin Williams and Andy Kaufman organized fundraiser shows.
Okay.
To help rebuild the place.
Oh, that was cool. Well, we're gonna have to do a whole podcast on Dangerfields, man. I got sidetracked. I looked at the Dangerfields website. Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
It's like from 1995 or something. My god, it's horrible. Hurt looking at it. All right, we'll save it.
Oh, look at that backdrop.
Yeah, dude.
That was like the Doki Doki backdrop that we use. Like when you like Google stage curtains,
yeah,
you know, to get like a Google image.
Oh my god, this is
another podcast, dude. Another podcast.
Okay, save it. Okay. Improv in Los Angeles got rebuilt.
Yeah. So then in the 80s, the newly launched cable network that went the Arts and Entertainment Network, also known as A&E,
also known as the Nazi Channel.
Why the Nazi Channel? Oh, because of all the documentaries.
Yeah.
Or is this how you see the world through Nazi eye filters?
No,
but you see Nazi and everything.
No, because they took over the world, dude. You got to keep your eyes open. Hugo Boss is still here making commercials.
Oh yeah. And another podcast in itself, we could talk about Coca-Cola.
Oh yeah, and
yeah,
and
big sponsor of the Olympic. Yeah,
and Fanta.
Fanta?
Yeah, that was a Nazi drink.
Well, Volkswagen too.
Yeah, well, that was we'll leave that there.
We now return to A&E's An Evening at the Improv.
So, Evening at the Improv, launched in the 80s, which was like, and that was like the kind of the start of the 80s comedy boom. So I think they did like, what, 200 episodes or either 200 episodes or they have like 200 hours worth of shows they filmed.
Yeah, it went for like 14 years. It was on A&E, that's a pretty good run.
Yeah, do you ever, like, I was Googling like old episodes, like, you know, like the iconic comedians, they're pretty funny, but God, there's just like a lot of bad 80s comedy. I was going to go on this theory that the 80s is probably the worst era of comedy.
And when cops pull you over, they always say one of two things, don't they? One, do you know why I stopped you? Like you're going to tell them. Well, yeah, I was doing 100. Got this bottle of Jack Daniels between my legs. And oh, drugs in the glove box.
It's like, you know, as you would say, like, what's the worst era of music? I would say almost for pop music, I would say like the 50s.
Yeah.
Other than jazz. Mm-hmm. But I think the 80s was like the worst era. Like 70s had like, you know, Richard Pryor and George Carlin doing their best bits.
It's Jesus Saves. I don't know who. Couldn't save his own ass.
Right.
And 90s, like, you know, that was like the rise of alternative comedy, but mm-hmm. I think the 80s was just like the shittiest comedy.
I think they just had so much of it, and it was just so like everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what they say here in this article, is that started the comedy boom where, and then improv clubs started opening up everywhere, like in San Diego, San Francisco, Irvine, Tempe, Washington, D.C. And there was just like this crazy comedy boom where there were so many clubs and such a need to fill comedy rooms with comedians.
Yeah.
It just got oversaturated. And I think that's why that A&E show is like so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause like, you know, everybody was on there. I remember there was like but it was a comedy club down the street mm-hmm. from me in Houston. And that was in the suburbs. And they had this like comedy club there. And that's how pervasive these things were.
Oh, did they have – who were the Houston Bat – or what was the name of, like, Sam Kinison's band?
Yeah, there was, like, the Outlaw
The Comics. Outlaws. Yeah.
And
were they playing there?
No.
Like Bill Hicks.
They might have been, but there was a big workshop. It was, like, the Comedy Workshop, I think it was, that was in mm-hmm. closer to downtown Houston. But they might have toured different places, you know.
Oh, I'm sure they played everywhere. If they're there in, like, not in L.A. and still coming up and coming, they played, like, everywhere.
Yeah, there was like a comedy workshop. This is another podcast again. There's like a comedy workshop in Austin and then one in Houston. I think that was called the comedy workshop. Another podcast.
Another podcast. So it's basically there was like an improv, and I think another big chain at the time was like Funny Bones.
Chuckle Buckets.
Yeah, and just like every strip mall had like a comedy club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that's why like the evening at the improv was like so bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting going back and watching, like, not, yeah, the, it's like, yeah, the big names are cool to watch, but it's kind of interesting to go back and watch the people who were kind of theoretically big back then, because, like, one of those, I know we watched
like,
we'll talk about this, so that, what we both watched that, was it the improv documentary?
Yeah. 50 years in front of the brick wall.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, it was a pretty interesting documentary, but one of the things they had Jerry Seinfeld on there, and he mentioned a comedian by the name of Ed Bluestone, right? And then he was starting out. And there was like, and Seinfeld was saying, you know, there was, this guy was pretty big, and like the announcer would, the MC would get up and just like go, Ed Bluestone's on the way, and you know, and everybody got all excited, and then a couple acts would go up, and he's like, Ed Bluestone's like 10 minutes away, and everybody would get excited. And then like I went, and I found a couple of his clips online, and you're just like, wow. I mean, he wasn't bad, it was just kind of non...
I called up that charity, Big Brothers. Figured I'd spend some time with a fatherless boy. They sent me a kid who had killed his father.
Yeah, it's kind of generic, just in case we want Ed on the show at some point. But the interesting thing I found out about him is he used to work for National Lampoon, and he's the guy who came up with the if you don't buy this magazine, we'll kill this dog cover. That was him.
Ah, nice. Oh, yeah. Okay. So he was probably more like a writer. There's a good documentary on the National Lampoon.
Yeah.
Came out like last year or maybe 2 years ago.
Right. Did you see that one?
Yeah, it was really good.
Okay. I'll watch that right after this.
Yeah, yeah. And I did a podcast with one of the guys in it.
Tony Hendry,
the
British.
Yeah. The guy who was like Spinal Tap's manager in the movie. And he was like one of the original National Lampoon guys on his podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so it is interesting to go watch his older shows and just watch all the people who didn't quite make it like they thought they were going to, or were tapped to become the next big thing but never did, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was just like back then there was like so much work for these guys because there's so many clubs, you know?
Go ahead.
There were so many comedians making a living and, you know, all they had to do is just be generic and get the generic laughs.
Okay, yeah. Like, these guys, I think, so it looks like they're still around. Let's see. No, they haven't updated the website in about 3 years. But it's called Shecky Magazine. Run by this Brian McKim and Tracy Skeen. But they would cover Montreal. I think they covered Montreal while we were up there.
Yeah, I remember Shecky Magazine.
Yeah, yeah. So it's still kind of around. But, like, Brian at one point, he was just – because he was a working comedian in the 80s, and he posted a blog post where he had all his airline tickets. Like, and he was getting paid, like, you know, by the clubs. So they would pay his airline ticket and put him up in a hotel, and you'd get money for, you know, opening or middle.
Per diem.
Yeah. So he was like, yeah, that's how much money was being made back then.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. So and with that, it just, that's what caved in, and that's like in the 90s kind of like brought the comedy recession on. It was you know, partly due to the expanse of, you know, things like the improv and oversaturation of like people just being turned off by evening at the improv, like these, you know, because if they had to fill like 200 hours or 200 episodes, whatever it was, it's like, again, it's law of averages. You're going to have to just book generic comedians. And like the improv style of comedy, you know, garnished that kind of like comedian in a sports jacket with the sleeves rolled up in front of a brick wall doing airline jokes.
Yeah, so
this is like that was like attributed, like that kind of like bad comedy was attributed to like, oh, it's like evening at the improv, you know?
Yeah,
and that, like, again, it turned off people, and like, you know, which brought, you know, the 90s alternative comedy boom.
What a great time to start doing stand up.
Yeah.
I picked a great time to start doing stand up. Yeah, right when things start to suck.
Yeah. So, but in the 90s, that brought the success of, you know, comics like Seinfeld and Ellen DeGeneres and Drew Carey and Tim Allen. You know, they all were improv comedians, and that sort of brought about another rise to comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then Comedy Central got its start, so that's kind of, you know, helped fill out the improv. But yeah, Judge Apatow, actually, that's where he met Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
The improv.
I think
they were roommates.
Yeah, it was in that improv documentary. And then I think what's funny is that, they had the clip of Apatow doing stand-up in the improv from that A&E mm-hmm. evening. And he is the shirt sleeve, the sports jacket rolled up sleeves guy.
But it scares the shit out of everybody he meets because no one expects it. It's like, that's my friend Tony. How you doing, Tony? Oh, God!
Yeah.
Which is what you had to be. That's what you had to do when you're being a comedian.
Yeah, yeah. And so with the new era, the comics of note were like Jamie Foxx, Dave Chappelle, Jeff Dunham.
Yeah,
dude. With his puppets.
How you doing, Peanut? I'm doing pretty good. How about you? I'm fine. That's good. That's good. That's good.
Silverman, Brian Regan, Daniel Tosh, Aisha Tyler, Bobby Lee. So they came out of the 90s sort of mm-hmm. Next wave of improv comedy.
Yeah.
So is this the part where we share improv stories?
I guess so. I mean, we can talk about our improv, our personal improv.
Bring it back to us.
Yeah, of course. You got to bring it back to the hosts.
Yeah. So there was a time where Bud yelled at me.
Uh huh. Tell me about that.
He said, "Don't stand there."
Okay.
I was just all excited. There's Bud Freeman. You know, it's like seeing like Ronald McDonald, you know, in real life.
There's more than one Bud Freeman? Was he wearing a monocle?
Yeah, of course he's wearing a monocle. No, I don't know. I mean, if he was wearing I'm pretty sure he was wearing a monocle.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, Bud is now like, I think he's about 83 now.
Yeah, he still looked pretty good in that improv documentary, though. I mean, he was still.
Yeah. Yeah, that was from the improv documentaries from 2013.
Okay, yeah.
Have I got a show for you tonight?
It's the single most insane thing that I've ever done in my life.
So I remember, at one time when I had, like, representation, I would get, like, regular spots at the improv when I would go down to L.A. And I, in without a doubt, I would always have to follow, like, one of the Wayans brothers. Like, you don't know which one. And they would always, like, and... Like, he would end his act with, like miming humping a chair or something like that. Nice. And the crowd's just going wild. And then you would go up and it's like, we don't know who you are. And you had to follow that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And so did you have to, so you had a spot automatically. You'd have to, like, wait.
No. I was working with Duncan and Colleen. They would set up spots for me.
Yeah, so they set up a spot for me and Stacey one time. Mm-hmm. Once, and that was, it went okay. We were in the big, well, it was just, they'd close that curtain off.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was just kind of a half a room. But all I remember is that, what's his name, went on before us, Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah.
The Jamie Kennedy experiment.
Dude, I infiltrated that show.
Maybe you could play
as T-Bone.
He's kind
That's a podcast in itself.
Like, I know,
infiltrated
dude.
It. Like, yeah. Tip helped me with that one. Tip Pope.
Okay, yeah.
With the infiltration.
Yeah, no, Chip and those guys they do. I think it's all about the I guess we can talk about the future of the Comedy Store. I mean, like, it seems like most.
Wait, back up. What did you say?
Oh, what? What
the future of the Comedy Store?
Yeah, did I skip? What?
No, we're the improv, dude.
Oh, improv. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I take that back. I mean, it's just.
Could a guy share one more funny story?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take away from your funny stories. Go ahead.
No, I only have, like, three of them.
Okay, yeah.
I only got too late to do two of them.
I had Jamie Kennedy. I'm done.
Yeah. So another time is like there was about eight people in the audience, and then I look out and one of them is Kramer from Seinfeld.
Oh my God, Michael Richards. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Did he stick a fork up your ass?
No, I think that night I was using the N word a lot, so I think that's where he might have got it from.
Really?
No, just kidding. Never.
No,
never,
right. No, we're not. We don't.
But I remember going to Duncan afterwards and I go, "Did Michael Richards laugh?" And he went, in parts.
Oh my god. Man, you almost missed your chance of being on Seinfeld.
No, this was during Seinfeld. I know. No, it was after Seinfeld.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Huh.
But yeah, I guess we can talk about the future. So lately, I think it's like the Improv's been featured in a few movies. I think last was, it says here on the site, the critically acclaimed Funny People.
Oh, that's the.
You see that movie's like so horrible.
Yeah, that was the Jon Apatow one.
Yeah, with Adam Sandler.
And when he was a comedian, he was like the dying comedian or something.
No, that's Man on the Moon. That's Andy Kaufman.
No, but I think he had cancer or something in that movie.
Did he?
Yeah, something like that. I never saw it.
I don't know. It's just really forgettable movie.
Yeah, on that same. Yeah,
I just remember Eric Bana was in it. And, yeah, who ironically started as a comedian in Australia.
Really? All right.
Well, yeah. So it was like he's known as this Hollywood heavy, but he started as like a stand-up.
Oh, okay. So I was just.
And then he was on a sketch show, and then he got that movie Chopper.
Okay.
Just,
yeah. You
know, which is a great movie. Yeah. Love that movie.
So I stopped by the Improv website just to kind of look at it and see what's going on now. They're a couple steps up from Dangerfields, but it's not that – they're still not hipstered up yet with the right fonts and everything. But they do have nachos there, I see.
Oh, that's there. Another thing about the Improv is like they would have like food named after comedians. Like I don't know about the main Improv, but like the franchise Improvs, I think it was like Andy Kindler had a bit about that. Like, you get an Ellen DeGeneres serving of fries.
Yeah,
like,
who was...
or like the Howie Mandel nachos or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I think that was. I think Jimmy. Yeah, it was Jimmy Fallon in that documentary was talking about. He got a sandwich named after him or something.
Yeah.
He was. I didn't realize that he'd start out there.
Yeah, he was just like what has made him so successful is just he's so darn likable.
You hear the stories of the Improv and Andy Kaufman and what he would do, and you go, oh yeah, I want to have my Andy Kaufman moment. Of course, I did it, and I shaved during my act. So sad.
Like Bud immediately just started like middling him in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Like Bud didn't think anything of him, and his wife just went, no, he's got something. And then Bud went up and talked to him afterwards, and he just said he was just so nice.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. And then the people, like my mom likes him.
Yeah, but if you look at his like early stand up, it was just like, you know, it's kind of like, what if so and so was a grocery clerk?
Yeah,
and then we just do the impression, like, you know, those kind of bits.
Yeah, it was,
but he's good at those bits, you know.
Yeah.
It's like he's a good talk show host.
Yeah, maybe we'll have him on one day.
Yeah, maybe so.
All right. I do notice the beer at the Improv is a little pricey. I'll
How
say
much?
That. It was $8 for a pint. Or is Ooh. That normal? Is that normal U.S. prices now?
That's kind of – it's not too crazy because, like, New York prices, you might pay that at bars.
Yeah. But when you get a piece of pizza, you get a slice of pizza. Not even a slice. You get a whole pizza with it.
In New York?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. At the Alligator Lounge.
Yeah, oh, man, the Alligator Lounge. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get them to sponsor.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess anything else? Any other Improv anecdotes?
I don't have any more. That was it. I mean, that was just – it was kind of cool just – yeah, like you said, it's kind of cool just going in there and seeing it, you know, and then it's not as – it's more of a wider – it's more wide, I guess. I mean
– Oh, the room. The room
yeah,
itself.
The room itself, yeah.
And yeah, like the bar out front is, like, really fun. So I used to just go, like, hang out there.
Yeah.
Like, you know – It was just like kind of a fun scene just hanging out there.
Yeah, and it's in kind of a happening part of town.
Melrose.
Melrose, yeah. So there's stuff around it and you can walk around. So yeah, so it is, it's kind of got that vibe to it. So this is, that's weird. So it looks like I want to know about their open mic. I was trying to see if they still have an open mic, how you get on it, and stuff like that. But this is interesting. They, their open mic's at 5:45 in the afternoon.
Yeah, so one time I did that when I was going to UCLA summer school, and it's just like, you just have to wait in a line with people, and it's all of those like LA sort of big club open mics is just an incubator of crazy.
Yeah, no.
You know, because everyone thinks they're going to be discovered. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was like kind of they talked about it in that documentary. I think Maron talks about it a lot too. Is like when like because he would do the other place, the Comedy Store, and he talked about there would be those regulars that you just see all the time, you know, and they might not have even been good at all, but because yeah. I guess Mitzi liked them and they would show up, they would go up, you know.
Yeah, it's like that. It's kind of like the same sort of feeling you get if you've ever been like a movie extra.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
hanging with movie extras, you know? They kind of think they're in it, but they're not, you know? Because all they have to do is just like show up and they yeah. would get, you know, 3 minutes of stage time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, like a movie extra, they think they're going to get like discovered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was. Yeah, it was just yeah. I played it that one time. That was it. But that was enough. I got to do it.
You know,
I got to stand up in front of the brick wall.
Yeah. Did you take a photo?
No, I didn't. It was all too quick. Jamie Kennedy was in the way, dude.
Oh, right. Oh, footnote correction. Footnote correction. Right. There was 400 hours of evening at the Improv film.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right.
That's 400 hours.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude.
I mean, if you had an evening, if you binge watched the entire series, you would be dazed.
Yeah, I know that would be. I don't think.
God, that would be like a funny story.
Yeah, just binge watching.
Watch all the. You would just go insane.
Yeah.
You would go insane with bad 80s comedy with rolled up sleeves.
Yeah, what would be really funny would be to watch all like the 1983. I love this.
Yeah.
I wonder if it could be done.
Oh, it can be done.
All right, maybe we could live blog it or something.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So, anyways, I think that's about it for history of the improv. So how do we log out of this?
I don't know. We brought it up to date and everything. What are we going to talk about next time?
Oh, next time, you'll have to tune in for next time. Pretty much anything in comedy that has a history, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. We can do that. Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good.
But thanks for listening. Where can they check us out, Scott?
Well, Harmon, you can find all the episodes. You can find all the episodes over at our website for Right Click Save, which also happens to be a company that we're running. That's rtcksave.com, rtcksave.com, and you can find them. You'll also be able to find them in Google Play and iTunes.
Yeah, yeah, and if you have any, like, comments or anything we might have fucked up, like, historically or accurately, you can reach me at Harmon Leon on Twitter, and where can they reach you?
I'm at Scott Kalonico, Kalonico, on Twitter as well.
And do we happen to have another podcast that we do as well?
Well, yes, we do. As a matter of fact, Harmon and I, if you enjoyed listening to me and Harmon ramble on, you can also listen to us ramble on about presidents, including our latest president, Mr. Donald Trump, at the podcast This Is the President. That you can find that up on Google Play, iTunes, and at my website, scottkalonico.com.
All right. Thanks for listening.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
We're out. Yeah.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.